This third session, the title of it is, I'm Free, I think. We talk about this idea of freedom. And I want to know whether or not I'm free. Mr. Preacher Man, tell me if I'm free. Well, see, there again is our problem. You're looking to me to see. But I want to start in Galatians 5:1. And I love the ESV's rendering of it here. You can see it in other translations, but I really love the way the ESV translates this passage. Yep, that's on. Just to get the things, to get our thoughts started. Paul says in Galatians 5:1, I think the King James renders it something like, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free. ESV says, for freedom Christ hath set us free. And what I love about that rendering, it's in the King James, stand fast in the liberty Christ has made you free. So you've got the duality there. But I love that for freedom way of expressing it. Because it shows the intent. In other words, it shows that the freedom that Christ gives to you is not simply what we typically refer to it as. If we weren't having this weekend sessions and I simply asked you, how did Christ set you free? I can almost guarantee you the answer that you would give me. He set me free from sin. He forgave my sins. Translated me from the kingdom of darkness, translated the kingdom of sun, set me free. And that's certainly, again, obviously a biblical truth, right? That's not what this verse says. It says he did set you free. Yes, he did remove your sin from you. But he did it for freedom. You know what that means? Having been set free from sin, translated into the kingdom of the dear Son, I now live in an area, in a realm that is intended to be a realm of freedom. You know what freedom, the problem with freedom is? The biggest problem with freedom is you got to make your own choices. And sometimes that's scary. Sometimes we don't know what to do with ourselves. Man works his entire life, retires, comes home, and his wife tells him, get out. You're under my feet all day. Leave me alone. You know, he comes home, and for 40 years, he's been an accountant, he's been an engineer, he's been a lawyer, he's been whatever. For 40 years, and he wakes up one morning, and guess what? I'm not. Freedom's scary. And oftentimes, we go to great lengths, whether we will admit it or not, not to have to deal with it. And certainly not to allow other people to experience it. Hello, HOAs. And do not, he says, submit again to a yoke of slavery. Which means before they became Christians, they were under a yoke of slavery. In contrast to the freedom in Christ, Paul argues that the Galatians were headed toward being under, again, a yoke of slavery. I want to notice that it is obviously important to note the word again. Stating that the being prior to being freed by Christ, they were enslaved. And that they were now, their choices were now leading them back to that same slavery. Well, that makes me ask a question. So to what had the Galatians been enslaved at the first? Galatians were not Jews. Not natively, not most of them. Well, Paul tells you, the Bible's a wonderful thing. As they told me in school, it's its own best commentary. You just keep reading the verses before it and after it, you'll usually find your answer. Do not be enslaved again to a yoke of bondage, a yoke of slavery. Well, that means they were enslaved once before. Where was it? Galatians 4 and verse number 8. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by natures are not gods. So in their lives prior to becoming Christians, they were enslaved by idols. Now hold on to that thought, right? Because before they became Christians, they were enslaved by idols. Have you read the book of Galatians, right? You good Bible students, I've been calling you that all week. I know you are, right? So you've read the book of Galatians before. Is the problem in Galatia that they're about to go back to idolatry? Nope. As we've been talking about all weekend, what were they about to head back to? Or what were they? Where were they heading? They were heading to that counterfeit gospel brought by the Pharisaical Judaizers. So they're not going back to idolatry. If the yoke of bondage was idolatry, Paul can't say again. Because they're going a different direction. Different path. The path that they were turning to was the path of the old law taught by the Judaizers. He tells them in 4:10, you observe days and months and seasons and years. That's Jewish. Tell me, he says in 4:21, you who desire to be under the law, which law? Law of Moses. Do you not listen to the law? So now I have a question to you. How is turning to the law of Moses the same as turning to idolatry? Because I'm pretty sure I've read my Old Testament too. And in the Old Testament, wasn't there a pretty strong distinction between the law of Moses and the worship of Jehovah and the worship of idols? I mean, it seems to me that the people of God got called into question many, many times because they turned to idols and turned away from God. So up until this point in Scripture, the worship of God, whether it be before the law of Moses, under the law of Moses, or even in the gospel, the worship of God has no again component to the worship of idols. But here it does. What's the connection? Well, to do that, let me ask it this way. Because what Paul has just told them is, don't go back again to a yoke of slavery. And that yoke of slavery in their formerly days was idolatry. So if what we're saying now is they're turning back to the law of Moses, is it fair to say that the law of Moses was a yoke of slavery? There are certainly many teachers that you can follow after who have that negative view of the law of Moses. Unfortunately, for them, Paul is not among their number. In Romans chapter 7, verse number 12, Paul says, the law is holy. The commandment is holy, righteous, and good. And then I want you to focus on verse 14 particularly, especially considering the topic that we have in front of us this weekend. Have you ever heard somebody say that the law of Moses was external, the law of Jesus is internal? The law of Moses deals with the fleshly, the physical. The law of Jesus deals with the spiritual. Ever heard anybody say that? Problem is, the Bible never says that ever. In fact, Paul affirms in 7:14 of the book of Romans exactly the opposite. After in verse 12, he's saying the law is holy, the commandment is holy, just, righteous, and good. He then turns around in verse 14 and he says, the law is what? Spiritual. Master, what's the greatest commandment of the law? Jesus answered, you shall love the Lord thy God with all the heart, soul, and mind. Him only shall you serve. The second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Is that internal, external? Is that fleshly, spiritual? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Golden rule, right? That's Matthew 7:12. We always quote the first half of the verse because it's catchy and we got a name for it, the golden rule. You ever quote the second half of the verse? Remember what it says? See? For this is the law and the prophets. Doesn't sound external to me. That doesn't sound physical to me. It doesn't sound fleshly to me. It sounds kind of spiritual to me. The law is spiritual. Paul's complaint about the law of Moses is not an intrinsic, inherent problem with the law of Moses. The problem is with the people who are teaching it in Galatia. Paul's complaint about the law of Moses is tied to a they. in the midst of the Galatians. Go back to Galatians 4, chapter 4, verse 17. They make much of you, but for no good purpose. They want to shut you out that you may make much of them. Then 5:10, he says, I have confidence in the Lord that you will take no other view. The one who is troubling you will bear the penalty, whoever he is. My personal opinion is that the they was led by the one. There was a major player in Galatia. Now, I'll go completely off the reservation here for just a second. Can't say that anymore. That's a politically incorrect term, I am sure, isn't it? Oh, well, I said it. The one here, you really want to know my thinking? I think the one here is Paul's thorn in the flesh in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. I think this dude was following Paul around from city to city and was the messenger of Satan, Paul's thorn in the flesh, that Paul asked to be cut off. I think Paul wanted God to strike this man dead. And Paul said, God said to Paul, my grace meaning the gospel, the revelation that I've given is sufficient for you. My gospel will answer him, nothing else. That's my thought. Anyway, take that for what it's worth. They were using it as a law, as a weapon. They had weaponized the law of Moses. They were manipulating the Galatians to giving up their standing, as we just noted in 4:17. They were doing this to protect their own interest. Let's get that. 6:12, let's read it with me. It is those who want to make a good showing in the flesh who would force you to be circumcised. Okay, here's that in the flesh thought again. Remember, our basic thought about in the flesh, locus of authority is external. I compare myself against others. I want to make sure that my self-image is good, because if my self-image is ever cracked, I go down that path of futility. I have to maintain that mentality about myself. Eric told me that you all studied a book several years ago. It's been several years ago. There's probably 7 or 8 years ago. It was actually a book about leadership, about putting people into boxes. I don't remember the name of the book. Y'all remember studying that in here? Some of you have been around here a little bit longer. Leadership and self-deception. That's the name of the book, and that's exactly what Paul's describing here. They want to make a good show of you in the good showing in the flesh. They have themselves in one box, and it's a really, really nice box. They've got you in another box, and it's not as good. The one thing that cannot happen is that your box and their box cannot come into contact, because that would destroy their self-deception. They would have to confront their own flaws and shortcomings. That can't happen. So how am I going to maintain the distinction? I'm a Jew. I have been the people of God. We're Abraham's seed. Never been in bondage to anybody. That's who we are. You are pagans, heathens, uncouth Gentiles. How am I going to keep the separation between us when Paul came in and preached a gospel of such simplicity? A gospel that says, whosoever will, let him come and drink of the water of life freely. A gospel which says, for you are all one in Christ Jesus, there is no distinction, neither bond nor free, male nor female, you are all one. Heirs according to the promise. Abraham's seed. Paul just said this uncouth Gentile is Abraham's seed. How on earth am I going to keep my self-image intact? The only way I can do it is to weaponize the law of Moses. You don't know it. I do. And if I make up stuff, if I add all the regulations of the Pharisees on top of it, you won't know it. They do that. They force circumcision. That was just the starting point. Sometimes we talk about the Judaizers. They say they wanted the Gentiles to be circumcised. That's not what Acts 15 says. It says they need to be circumcised and to keep the law of Moses. When Paul says to them, you who do tell me, you want to be under the desire of the law, do you not read the law that if you're accountable for one point, you're accountable for it all? Well, in a practical sense, that was also true because those Judaizers would take circumcision as the launching point and wrap you fully up into that yoke of bondage that they could not bear, you could not bear. But they do this. Why? So that they can avoid being persecuted for the cross of Christ. So what do the course, they, of course, those Judaizers who are the constant enemies of... Now I'm all messed up again. Where am I, man? I need the side that says the two yokes of slavery are the same. That's the one I need. There it is. Thank you, sir. And it's still not working for me. There we go. The Galatians had already... See, what's going on is Jason is having to actually move the cursor along or else my remote's not working properly. So the Galatians had already experienced the yoke of slavery that came from paganism. That's what we just established. You were enslaved to idols. Yet they were now in danger of experiencing the yoke of slavery that came from a Judaistic application of that same law. Paul was adamant that submitting to the doctrine of the Judaizers would nullify the freedom of Christ. Christ, he says, will be of no advantage to you if you accept a circumcision. You will effectively be severed from grace. What do they have in common? What was common between the teaching of the Judaizers and the law of Moses, and pagans? Well, I need you to listen with me for a little while here. We'll do our best. Paul uses an interesting phrase, and we referenced it at the close of the last lesson. We'll mention it again here in more detail. To connect the past slavery of the Galatians and the present slavery that they and others were about to go under. He uses it primarily in the book of Galatians and the book of Colossians. Here are four examples of it. In Galatians 4:3, in the same way, we also, when we were children, were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. He's actually talking there about the Jews. He says in verse 9 of the same chapter, but now that you have come to know God, you Gentiles, we were the children of God under governors and tutors under the old law, subject to the elementary principles of the world. I say largely because of the Pharisees. He says in verse 9, but now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known of God, you're now His people as well, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world? Well, some commentators say, well, the elementary principles of the world is the old law. Can't be, because the Galatians were never under it. And now he's saying you're going to turn back to it. In Colossians 2:8, we read it earlier, see that no one takes you captive. Philosophy, empty deceit, according to human traditions, according to the elemental spirits of the world, not according to Christ. In 2:20, if you with Christ died to the elemental spirits of the world, why do you live as if you were still subject to those things? What is the commonality? Well, the commonality is expressed in what Paul describes as the elemental spirits of the world. The elemental portions of the world. I asserted in the last session, and I think it's right, that the base nature that Paul is talking about here is that humanity, without the intervention of God, or the direction of God, lives with the mind of the flesh as the default state. Because the mind of the flesh compares against each other. And think about it, in every area of life, that is effectively what you are judged by, isn't it? In every area of life. You are judged by your race, your gender, your age, your education, your accomplishment, your achievement. How fast can you run? You make the team. Can't run fast enough, can't jump high enough, you don't make the team. That is the way life works in nearly every discipline, in every culture, and in every area. In every era. That's the simply area, is by the way, when you combine area and era. You get area. Every place, position of life, that's the way we exist. And see, people come to religion, come to spirituality, and guess what? You apply the same metric, the same paradigm to it. And so whether you're worshiping idols or whether you're a fleshly minded Jew, you transform your idol or you transform the worship of the living God into the same form of worship. It operates under the same metric, the same paradigm. And it is a paradigm of slavery and bondage. In every instance of slavery. the one who enslaves you strips away your right of self-determination. That's kind of the definition, isn't it? You cannot make a choice from yourself. And every slave must admit that the source of his or her authority is external to him or herself. That's the definition. Somebody else makes all of my decisions. In both instances, the idols and the Judaizers. The Galatians were being given, asked to give up their right of self-determination and follow the arbitrary rule of others. They were asked to be under hand managers, sometimes self-appointed. Galatians 4, we just read it, Galatians 4, 3. The child is no different than the servant when he's a child, when he's an heir. But he is under hand managers. Governors and tutors until the time appointed by the Father. In Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 and 2, Jesus says, the Pharisees, the scribes and the Pharisees, where do they sit? They sit in the seat of Moses. They have taken the position of arbiter and authoritarians for the law of Moses. Now Jesus does say, when they sit in that seat, you do what they say. Because occasionally, you know what they do? They actually get it right. When they're actually rightfully sitting in the seat of Moses, you do what they say because they're not. It's not because they say it. Why are you doing it? Because Moses said it. The problem is, as he goes on to say, that they would, as we've referenced, encompass the land and sea to make one proselyte, to get one person to come over to their way of thinking and to follow them and to set them up with praise and honor and glory. The idols also carry that same divine authority. Does an idol ever talk? Idols don't talk. So how do you know what an idol is saying? Well, guess what you need? You need a priest. Guess what that priest is? A fleshly man who, for all intents and purposes, we'll just call him a Pharisee of the idols. They had to submit to human traditions, divine traditions, under human oversight. And they had to submit to external regulations. That's the commonality. They had changed the Pharisaical priest, if you will, of idols to a fleshly minded priest of idols, and they had transferred it and allowed the fleshly minded priest of the Pharisees inside Christianity to become the same arbiters of right and wrong for them. They had simply changed their location. They had not changed their philosophy. And Paul's whole argument is, that is not the gospel that I brought you. For freedom, Christ hath made you free. Even above death and taxes, the universal human experience in each is to be enslaved to something else. Paul even makes the case in Romans 6, you will be a slave to something. You will follow something. Present yourself to unrighteousness, you'll be its servant. Present yourself to righteousness, you will be its servant. True freedom is the exception in human experience in every place. In every place. There has always been somebody who rises up to be in charge. I don't watch a lot of those reality shows. I think I maybe watched one episode of Survivor in however many years it's been on. But you don't have to watch many to figure out what's going to happen, do you? You put a group of people together like that, and it's not going to be long before somebody thinks they're the big dog in the room. And as we said last night, more than likely, what you find is that person is the least spiritually minded person. It's the most arrogant, overbearing person in the room. That's just the nature of it. There's always somebody in your experience who thinks they know better than you. There's one thing I know for certain, and this has nothing to do with partisan politics at all, but I know one thing. Whether they're Democrat, Republican, or whatever they are in Washington, you know what they think? Because nearly all of them went to some Ivy League school, every one of them thinks they're smarter than we are. That much I know to be a universal truth. And they are on some level entitled to tell us how to live. for right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you agree with what they're telling us or not agreeing with what they're telling us, I know they think they've got the right, and yay, the divine obligation to do so, because we need them. Because that is the nature of human existence. Somebody, dictator, a bureaucrat, or in religion, a priest, is going to rise up and let you know you need them. To a certain degree, every choice or action we have in life is subject to the judgment of somebody else, even in this land of the free. How many choices do you make in your life that are completely your own? I joked about HOAs recently, just now. Try to paint your house recently? Where do you put your garbage can? You know, I think y'all have them here. But out in Texas, gotta say it like that when I'm... We actually have HOAs in the city of Houston that will not allow you to park a pickup truck in your driveway. In Texas! A pickup truck! I'm not talking about like a work truck that's got all the stickers and the branding. I'm talking about your $60,000 pickup, because that's what they buy down there with all the oil money. These things are nicer than the houses you're living in. And you can't park a pickup truck in a driveway? Seriously? Seriously? Really? How many choices do you make in life that some regulator, someone, somewhere, you don't know that person's name, you don't know anything about them, but somewhere somebody wrote something to tell you whether or not you could buy the thing you want to buy, live where you want to live, eat what you want to eat, and so on. I'm not going to New York City. I want me a big gulp. I'll decide whether or not I'm going to drink it all. Somebody is telling you how to do it. Are you truly free? Well, Jesus did not just come to make you free from the bondage of your past. He made you to experience freedom for freedom's sake. In other words, as he would say, he came to give you life, to give it more abundantly. For an individual to be free, he needs two things. He must have the right and the opportunity of self-determination. Got to. So let no man boast in men. All things are yours, whether Paul's or Apollos, Cephas or the world of life, or whether the present or the future, all are yours. And you are Christ, and Christ is God's. All things are yours. You have the right and the opportunity of self-determination. Let me pause right here and just make this point. Elaborate on something we said earlier. You need to understand that that is one of the scariest propositions that you're ever going to come across. I want to take a risk here. Eric's going to cringe when he hears me about here, but you're going to have to hang with me. These people, they'll be good with me. America's history of racism and slavery, an atrocious thing. But I want to put yourself in the position of a slave, former slave, in 1866. Now, the law of the land says you're free. You have both the right and the opportunity of self-determination. Probably the moment that Emancipation Declaration came down, it was a little bit earlier than that, but when that came down, do you imagine your heart would have just leapt for joy? I have the right now of having my family back together. No man can... That's great. But in the weeks, the days, the months, what do you do? Because I don't have any money. I don't have any land. Can't even buy land. There's none for sale. What do I do? You know what? Y'all know what they did. They became sharecroppers. They stayed on the same land. and they started farming the land, which are now technically, no. They just turned in, if you will, a hard slavery for a soft slavery. Why'd they do it? Because you didn't have any other choice. The options of not going back to that former system were so unthinkable. Just like in Israel, when they left Egypt, they're free, right? At some point, life got so hard that what did they say to Moses? Take me back. At least I knew where my next meal was coming from. Take me back. And we read that and we go, what in the world? Before they were crying, God heard their cry. He set them free. Take me back. As hard as it is to contemplate, I guarantee you there were people. There were former slaves in the South who said, at least my master fed me, put clothes on my back, and I knew where I was going to sleep. And it's unthinkable that people would actually have that thought, but they did. For freedom, Christ hath made you free. And I'll guarantee you, if you ever really start to think about that spiritually, it is one of the scariest things you'll ever contemplate. Whose choice is it? What am I going to do in the service of God? What am I going to do Tuesday morning at 9:30 for God? And you know what we do? We draw back. And we run back to people like the Pharisees, because at least with them, I had somebody who would give me my next meal and put a shirt on my back even though it was tattered and worn. Oh, I would never do that. You do it all the time. I was reading Facebook the other day. It was right at Easter. Preacher, I'm not going to give you his name. He's a Facebook friend of mine. He's an acquaintance. His name doesn't matter. I'm not acting that particularly close to him. Posted an article, blog post, Facebook page, whatever it was. Celebrating Easter is a sin. Okay. Why has he got to do it? Well, I'll tell you, part of why he's got to do it, because I actually went to his Facebook page after he posted that. I was just interested. And you know, you can put a little bio about yourself on your Facebook profile page. His tagline was, an unworthy servant trying to do his duty. Now, I don't want to judge the man too harshly. I've never had any in-depth spiritual conversations with him. It's one of the reasons I'm not telling you who he is. But if that tagline is truly indicative of his spiritual development, I will tell you that makes perfect sense with the article that he wrote. Because you know what a servant, an unworthy servant, a fleshly minded person who is focus is external to himself, do you know what that person cannot have? That person cannot have you enjoying something that he can't. You ever met somebody like that, where we talked last session about somebody at work, 8 to 5, got to be here at 8 to 5. You ever have somebody who's a clock watcher for you? You show up 2 minutes late, you leave 2 minutes early, whatever, and what's that? You ever had somebody like that? They're more concerned about whether or not you're doing what's right, because I'll tell you what they're concerned about. And when they start doing that, I know one thing's going to be true about them. They don't love their job. They're not doing it out of love, passion, desire. It's not their spirit that's engaged. It's their flesh that's engaged. And they view it as a duty They view it as a burden, as a grievance to be borne, and if they have to pick up that load from 8 to 5, how dare you walk in here 2 minutes late, because I've been holding this log for 2 minutes without you. And don't you dare stop 2 minutes early, because I'm going to have to hold it for 2 minutes without you. So they're going to start holding that log and make sure you're right there with them. And that's what that article is. Don't you dare celebrate Easter, because I can't do it. My kids aren't going to do it. And if you do it, I'm going to tell on you. That's what it is. Now, how many of us listen to those people? Take them as the authorities. How many of us, when a new television show comes on, when a new restaurant opens, when a new movie comes out, when a new activity place opens up, how many of us look to somebody else to let us know whether it's okay to go there? How many times have you thought about going to see a movie and you wondered, well, I wonder what all the brethren would think? Now, please understand the context in which I'm saying that. There are other considerations, other applications. I'm talking about, are you looking to them not out of consideration, not out of your wanting to make sure there's peace among brethren? Are you looking to them? Are you worried about them? If I go there, they're going to judge me. We do it all the time. Why do we do it? Because on some level, it is easier to let somebody else make that decision. It's easier for somebody else to do that. Tell us how to think and how to worship and how to act, because on Tuesday morning, I don't have to make up my own mind. And so we do it. Just like Israel in the wilderness, wandering back. Just like somebody willing to become. We go back. And Paul looks at the Galatians and he says, I just set you free from that. Jesus just set you free from empty deceit and from human traditions and from regulations that have no connection to the nature and the glory of your God. Regulations that will never help you transform to be like your God. We just set you free from that. And he actually asked them, have you so learned Christ? That's not what I taught you. I taught you to be free. To make up your own mind. The spiritual man is judged by